With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
Good morning and welcome to Reality Check Radio. It's Marie here, and I am pleased to introduce to you the Fourth Estate Encore session that we recorded a few weeks ago during the big off-air. It is with Judge David Harvey, retired, and my mate Marty from Media Matters, and we were discussing what was going on in the media that particular week, as it was certainly a very busy time. Now, obviously, since the time of recording, there has been that cabinet reshuffle, and it has seen Melissa Lee lose the broadcasting portfolio. But there's lots of interesting insights, and you can certainly hear David and Marty zinging off each other as it was the first time that they'd ever met. It's a great panel. I hope you enjoy it. And the best part is the Fourth Estate will return here on Reality Check Radio from next week, as too will Marty with Media Matters. So make sure you stay tuned. The Fourth Estate, of course, here every Friday morning. And Media Matters is in Counterculture Wednesdays here on Reality Check Radio. But for now, enjoy this encore session of the Fourth Estate.
This is the Fourth Estate on RCR Reality Check Radio.
Welcome along to Reality Check Radio, the off-air editions, as I'd like to say, and a very special edition of the Fourth Estate. I am Marie Buskey. Good afternoon, or evening, really, to everybody. And joining me today, I've got Marty Gibson, my partner in crime from Media Matters. Hey, Marty, how's it going?
I'm great, thanks, Marie. Good to see you. Well, forever, I mean, I normally see you, but now everyone else can see us as well.
Exactly.
And terribly exposed.
And it's the first time Marty's been along for the Fourth Estate, but of course a repeat offender, I don't know whether you're going to get three strikes on this one, is retired Judge David Harvey. How are you, David?
I'm very well, thanks, Marie. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you too, and welcome back. Oh, well, just before we got started, what a 24 hours. It's been a day. Of course, we had the announcement at the end of last week with News Hub. It all been over. No deal could have been struck to save the news service. And now, like a so-called phoenix rising out of the ashes, a deal has been struck between Stuff, as opposed to the other contenders in the mix, which were NZME and Sky Australia, to provide news services back to 3 News at that 6 o'clock slot. Who wants to kick this ball off? Marty, should we start with you?
Well, it'll be a good lurch leftward. I was wondering, they've said they haven't finalised a name yet.
I reckon they need to hire Paddy Gower, 6 o'clock segment, and it's called Get Stuffed. Just saying.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But they've really been in the thick of they're consistently rated as one of the most left-leaning news outlets, and that's taking journalists at a whole in New Zealand surveyed to rate themselves as 80% left or hard left, and it's also about 88% of people who think that news is biased. So I'm not seeing that doing anything to correct that structural problem that journalism's got. But I hope it works. It'd be great to see New Zealand having more than one television news outlet. But it would have been good to have maybe seen NBR do it or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, in terms of the bias, I mean, in that trust survey, which we'll get onto a little later, I mean, the drop from 2023 to 2024 for News Hub was 7.8%. Stuff was 8%. The other offerings that were in the survey, New Zealand Herald and News Talk ZB, both under the NZME umbrella, were 6% and 4.1% respectively. So, you know, they are moving literally, I think, from the frying pan to the fire. What are your thoughts, David?
Well, you've got to remember, and your use of the word fire probably leads me into it. It was Stuff who gave us the wonderful Fire and Fury, which was the most biased piece of television journalism that I think that I had ever seen. And furthermore, to make it even more interesting, the producers of that particular program, Paula Penfold, I think was one, and there was another one, actually only told one side of the story. They didn't actually approach the other people and produce any sort of balance at all. But I agree with Marty. It is what appears to be a left-leaning outfit. And I've read some of the comments that have come forth from Sinead Boucher and others about maximising digital output and all the rest of it from a company that can't even put up a decent website. If that's their ability as far as digital is concerned, they've got a lot to learn. And that, to me, is a bit of a worry. But the other thing that comes out of all of that is that we've got a merging, if you like, of a television outfit with a print outfit. Under normal circumstances, it would probably be something like a takeover, only these aren't normal circumstances. In other occasions, there have been problems when Sky, for example, tried to get together with Vodafone, as it then was, without any success because of who? The Commerce Commission. Now, the Commerce Commission has absolutely no interest in this, I don't think, although it may have, because what in fact is happening is that Stuff is providing TV3 or News Hub or whatever name they're going to have, just content, news material, and there isn't any sort of business takeover or anything like that. So there's not going to be any competition issues, or at least ostensibly no competition issues that would attract the attention of the Commerce Commission. But I thought to myself, as when this was announced, I thought, crikey, this is getting very, very close. But I think a lot of people are going to turn blind eyes to all of this because, A, it's important that the media survives, isn't it? In whatever form.
I'm just sorry, Marty, I just muted you because of the wind where you were.
I tell you what, I'll just shut up some things.
Right. While you're going to do that, in respect to that, David, it will be interesting to see where they transcend. And I think there will be a lot of convenient, as you said, willful blindness on all of this. And what has stunned me is the level of hyperbole that has transpired in this time with a number of opinion pieces that have gone out in terms of this catastrophizing of the fact that these media outlets are suffering and this news is going. 35 years they've been around. They've already managed to sort of come back from the brink once for 11 years, and I'm talking about TV3. They have looked at the model. There has been dramatic change since 2006 in terms of how we all consume media. And was it one of the headlines, the end of news as we know it, Duncan Grieve? I mean, really? Really, Duncan? I mean, and I think there was the other opinion piece as well saying that we are going to have so little news we won't know what to do it. I am stunned by this. I mean, I remember growing up at a time when news meant waiting for the pips on the radio. And if you were in a smaller area, you got the evening newspaper. And if you were in a larger area, you had the luxury of a morning edition. I mean, that was the news. And then the Philip Sherry on the bulletin for half an hour, not a whole hour, half an hour. And that was the sum total. So
well, if it's the end of the news as we know it, I would say jolly good, because I don't actually like the news as I know it today. And I can recall that Peter Williams, who's also an RCR person, but wrote a very, very good article on Substack, I think late last week or early this week, where he reflected on what happened in 1981 during a Springbok tour and the reporting that surrounded that. And the reporting was that both sides actually got to tell their story. When there was an interview with Seth Blasey from the rugby union, they would have Trevor Richards or John Minto from the other side talking about whether or not we should have a Springbok tour or a South African rugby tour. And it was balanced. and both sides were put forward, that means that the audience, and we might talk about the audience in a little while, got to hear both sides of the story and could make up their mind and make a properly informed decision. At the moment, you don't get that, and that's unfortunate. And if that's going to change, if there's going to be a reversion back to that style, old-fashioned though it might be, it is balanced, and that's the way that it should be. But the end of news, as we know, let's bury it.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Marty, having come from a more traditional newsroom and then looking at what's happening now with a print media company looking at entering into the space? Do you think they can pull it off? Pull yourself off mute, my friend.
We're doing it now. It's just whether people are going to be shocked by seeing what's on their TV. I mean, the production values of 3 News have been really high, and they probably should have cut their cloth to suit earlier. I mean, as I said, my concern is similar to David's, in that I'd like to see both sides of the story, and I'd like that not to be so beyond the pale. I used to write opinion pieces about 15 years ago, where I opined that Al Gore's hockey stick wasn't going to happen. And I said that on the basis of a degree in science, which studied oceanography and the hydrosphere and paleo weather. And they were printed, and I was probably the only journalist in New Zealand in a mainstream paper that at the time that was saying that. And it turned out I was right. The hockey stick hasn't happened. But now I wouldn't be able to print that in the paper that I'd originally printed it in, even though I was right. Because the orthodoxy is, well, you can only really go one way on climate, for instance. In the same way as you can only go one way on transgenderism. You can only go one way on any other number of things. And so the disgruntlement with media is arising from that. And you can just see in all the commentary it is tying itself in knots, trying to do anything other than confront that.
Mm. And there's also, too, they're starting to cry that we can't compete with the funding of TVNZ. So therefore, you know, but you need to have us. We're there for balance. And my argument is actually, you're right, Marty, there's a lot of other people now starting up. There are people out there. We're out there. The platform is out there. There's some great people in the print space that are starting to do stuff. There's blogs. There's even NZME's been sort of reaching out and doing different things in terms of what they've been doing with News Talk ZB and ZB Plus. There is plenty of news out there, and I wonder whether News Hub have lost touch with their audience and who their audience actually are. And I think stuff coming on board is only going to be delivering more of the same.
And well, still more of the same, but worse, potentially.
Yeah, I think the comment that you made, Marie, about losing touch with the audience is probably most adequately exemplified by Paddy Gow's response to Mike Hosking and Sean Plunkett. Now, I'm perfectly prepared to accept that he was probably going through the various stages of grief and was in the anger part because he'd lost his job. And, you know, you got to feel sympathy for anybody who's lost a job. But he probably demonstrated, you know, when he said about a large section of the audience that was critical of them being woke and so on and so forth, well, they can go and get stuff. Well, of course, now they've got stuff. But on the other side of it, that was a complete put-down of the people that he's playing to, of a significant portion of his audience.
Mm.
And another journalist who behaves in precisely the same manner is Simon Wilson of the New Zealand Herald, who put in a piece on Saturday which I've done an analytical substack on. I've taken paragraph by paragraph and analysed that article. And I think that, and I've done it paragraph by paragraph, to be fair, because there's some good stuff, but there's also a lot of bad stuff in that particular article. So Wilson talks about the AUT survey, 1,000 people surveyed, and part of that demographic he described as middle-aged Pākehā, and then started to hoe into them, saying that they were a shouting mob and so on and so forth, and that coming from a preachy journalist, I think, probably a bit ironic. But he didn't realise that he was talking about his audience. These are the people that consume his stuff. What do? Do you alienate your audience in that way? No, of course you don't. These are people who disagree with him, you see, and because Wilson is progressive, and, you know, people who disagree with progressives are automatically wrong. So, you know, you can understand where he's coming from if you know that. But he and Gow, both of them, disrespected their audience in the most terrible way, and that's silly.
Well, it struck a lot of the outrage coming out of journalists, and Paddy Gower certainly falls into this for me, is almost narcissistic rage. You know, and you know, how many people remember much more than one or two news stories about the 150 workers of, say, the Auckland-based printer Ovato in 2022?
Yeah.
It was just a blip. This has been constant coverage, much the same way as so many stories around COVID and the effects of Auckland being locked down were about hairdressers and cafes. It's because the 20-something, 30-something ladies who were reporting on the news, that's what interests them. And with Simon Wilson, he belongs to that kind of baby boomer New Zealander, I find, who regard the Springbok tour in much the same way as a meth addict regards their first hit of meth. You know, it's this heady nostalgia that they've been chasing ever since in more and more degrading ways, just trying, desperately wanting to be right and their opposition to be wrong. And it doesn't lend itself to nuanced debate. And it was I read your article. It was a great breakdown of it, and made that point very well. I thought that he's, especially that he said, well, because I'm the sort of person I'm denigrating, I can do it. I'm allowed to do it.
He's got freedom of expression. Anybody can do it.
Come yeah. He doesn't understand freedom of speech.
He does not.
And then
well, of course he doesn't, because if you don't agree with them, then you're not allowed to say anything.
And it's then the missing angle from the less government, more freedom side of politics. I don't say right-wing because it's so laden with emotion, but it's important, if we can stay with methamphetamine use, I'll labour that analogy. It's the difference between short-term and long-term kindness. So the way that people who don't subscribe to the socialist dream are characterised is that we're big meanies. But it's, you know, if you want to be kind to someone who's addicted to methamphetamine in the long term, you know, sometimes the best thing you can do is call the police and get them the appropriate treatment if they're doing crazy stuff. In the short term, the kindest thing you can do is give them more methamphetamine. So it's which one you prefer.
Yeah, your comment about less government sort of took me back to our opening topic about stuff galloping to the rescue at News Hub. I'm, in some respects, you know, even although it's stuff, I'm glad it's happened that way, because it means that Melissa Lee doesn't have to worry about whether or not she's going to have to ask Winston Peters if she can bail out TV3. She doesn't have to. They've been bailed out. And I think it's a classic example of Melissa Lee probably very, very carefully staying well in the background and letting things work themselves out, because the solution has come from the media itself. It hasn't come from the government, nor should it. Mm. The idea of a handout going to somebody who's failing, particularly in a commercial enterprise, to me is anathema. And I'm sorry if I sound like an economic Darwinist, but if you can't survive in the jungle, you don't deserve to survive.
Yeah, well, there was another comment that, sorry, Marie, Simon Wilson made. He said, in the media, we like to tell ourselves we're not making baked beans. It's true. News media isn't a commodity product. It's crafted by highly skilled people who work hard to do a good job. Most of them could get much better paid work doing something else, but they do journalism because they like it, and especially because they believe in it. Now, this applies even more to Reality Check Radio. It's like the scene in The Godfather 2 where Michael Corleone tells Hyman Roth that he saw a rebel blow himself up when he was arrested, killing the soldiers as well as himself. He said the soldiers are paid to fight, the rebels aren't. And Hyman Roth says, what does that tell you? And Michael Corleone says that they can win.
Mm.
And I think that's where we are. You can go through a list of differences between what we're doing here and what mainstream media are doing. And they're very stark once you start thinking about it. We're volunteer or koha funded, whereas they're highly paid, sometimes overpaid. We strive for balance and do what we do to provide balance, and opposing views are often completely ignored by them. We're beholden to our conscience. They're beholden to advertisers. We do long-form interviews. They tend to do sound bites. We tend to acknowledge the radical change that's underway in society, and they pretend that we're in some sort of stable status quo. We're certainly willing to go outside the Overton window, and they exist very carefully in it. And we favour reason, they favour emotion. It's stark.
And I think the most important thing too is we do not patronise our consumers. We allow them to consume content and make up their own minds. And the long format interviews that we do, I know certainly with the interviews that I do, is that it's allowing somebody to speak. I'm not there to completely challenge them, particularly if I don't agree with them. I'm there to provide a space where we can have a discussion and a conversation. And it's up to our listeners to decide what they take from that conversation or not. It's not for me to tell them what to take or steer them in a certain direction. And I think that is a skill and a nuance that many of these larger organisations seem to have forgotten.
A courage.
Yeah, it's the baked beans of information, isn't it? That's the product. Poor old Simon, you really missed it on that one. But it's the baked beans of information.
And what's interesting with that, David, is that and Simon's piece was such a glaring opposite to the one that Marty and I spoke about last week from Dr. Bryce Edwards.
Yes.
Which was it was an excellent report and summary of what that AUT Trust report was. And I have no qualms in saying that. It was very well done.
Are we the baddies?
But what Simon overlooked completely was that the reasons for the decline in trust in the media came from that report. There wasn't a single word in his article that acknowledged that. Rather, he was concerned about shouty Pākehā middle-aged people that he was now able to talk about because he's one of them. But there was nothing. There was absolutely nothing. Whereas, of course, Bryce, in his article, went into that and delved into that. And that was proper because what it means is that mainstream media must hold up a mirror to itself and, you know, look carefully at what it is that they have been doing that is causing their audience to decline in such a way.
He summarised beautifully, is media bias to blame? The AUT survey suggests that the public blame the media for becoming less trustworthy. According to the report, those who say they don't trust and or avoid the news are most concerned about the negativity of news, including its impact on their mental health and what they perceive as political bias and opinion masquerading as news. Respondents who did not trust the media were asked what factors had reduced their trust. 87% believed the news was biased and unbalanced. 82% believed news reflected the political leaning of the newsroom. God help us with this new arrangement. And 76% regarded news as too opinionated and lacking in actual information. Yep. Well, could they not run fast enough in the opposite direction to this?
Yeah, the actual AUT report press release was telling in that the Dr. Merger, I should have practiced this name, but I didn't. Mailaiti, who is the co-director of JMAD and co-author of the report, said, journalism has lost its authority as the main source of news and information. In general, people distrust the information they see, and they are increasingly checking their facts, in inverted commas, themselves. This phenomenon is highly problematic. Now, my personal feeling is that thinking that people thinking for themselves is highly problematic is highly problematic.
Yeah, well, hey, of course, that's what critical thinking is all about. Somebody makes an allegation, check it out. Are other people making that allegation? Where did the allegation come from? What was its source? Is it supported in any way? You would probably be well aware, Marty and Marie, about the old adage that you always have more than one source for your information. Similarly, as a reader, you know, more than one source. I have written extensively about the application of critical thinking insofar as the consumption of information is concerned. Nothing wrong at all. It's a bit problematic that somebody's actually questioning that there should be some critical thinking going on, because that is a worry. But you see, that I've been trained all of my life to question everything. Where's the evidence? Let me see the evidence. Take me to the evidence. Is that evidence reliable? Is it trustworthy? Is it persuasive? I'm going to be making a decision to advise a client based on that evidence. I'm going to make a decision to convict a criminal based on that information. You know, I want to be sure. So I'm very, very hot on the idea of evaluating information. You do it.
It is a laziness that I think probably inevitably creeps in with the volume of information people are processing, whereby they, rather than examine different sources, they find a source of information they agree with and identify with that, or even more lazily, and this is the way children are often trained to think at school, good people think that, I want to be a good person, so I'll think that, and if someone doesn't think that, by process of elimination, they're a bad person.
I always used to say, when I was in legal practice and in the other job, there are 24 hours in the day. Use every one of them wisely.
As I get older, I'm realising that's true.
Yeah, well, you don't need as much sleep, do you, Marty?
But it's interesting, that point that you make, Marty, because, and I mean, you have lamented this so many times, and in Media Matters we talk about this all the time when we read different pieces, is that we see this both in media and we also see it in education, where you've had a lot of journalists fall out of the system, fall out of media. And I think there was a number that was floating around, it was around 2021, 2022, that around 50% of the journalists now work for the government. They're spin doctors in one form or another, trained journalists. So what they then do is they craft these press releases, or if they're working in the Department of Education, they're crafting policy documents and guidelines and for education. They put them out to news outlets and to teachers. And when you're so time poor, they just take that document and run with it because they really don't want to do anything more with it. And so often we've seen things that it's kind of like, wow, all you've really done is, well, we can generally tell, can't we, Marty, is because there's no name on the byline. It's usually the, you know, the team from staff or from the, you know, staff reporters. And it's like, no, that's the press release from the government.
Yeah, well, and the giveaway often also is that there's no real opposing view. And you can, yeah, you can very much read that it's written from the perspective of someone who's all for the thing that's about. And I see a lot of articles on breakfast TV that plainly have their origins in drug company press releases or features.
Well, and a huge amount of editorial too. I mean, they don't necessarily assign that it's editorial. I mean, Seven Sharp, I watched that by accident recently, and the whole thing seemed to be paid advertising to me. So it, either that or, you know, whoever that editor is and producer doing that show really does need a solid talking to, because it was completely dreadful. But that's one of the things that is staying. So then that says to me it must be commercially viable because they've not got rid of it.
But to me,
especially through a big advertiser,
when you've had an hour of news where you've had to concentrate and extend your intellectual capacities to the nth degree after watching TV One News, don't you need a bit of froth and bubble for half an hour afterwards?
Oh, well, I prefer my froth and bubble in the form of Blanc de Blanc, I'm afraid, David. Not certainly of Newsboy and Hillary Stabby Jabby. So, no, not really, to be brutally honest with you.
Well, I mean, yesterday's breakfast news on Three was a lady saying the government hadn't consulted with them about their concerns that houses were being built on land that you could grow things on. Air New Zealand saying that they were buying sustainable aviation fuel at hugely increased prices to mix in as a fraction of their other fuel. And then there was something else that really, in the context of everything that's wrong, all the challenges we're facing, the US bond market's apparent collapse recently, gold reaching record highs. So as I said, the media is the voice of everything's fine, maintain confidence in the system, that money that they're printing is worth something. And so it is, there are a whole lot of people who do have a vested interest in not scaring the sheep. And those people also have algorithms that detect how often people are talking about getting all their money out of the bank. There's a very, and you know, you could say it's conspiracy theory thinking. It's not like people never get together to work on their common interests. And often people who talk about conspiracy theories don't actually study them and discount them, but rather tend to be a bit scared at the idea that reality as it's presented to them on the news might be a lie.
That's something that the media uses as a shorthand for information that's untrustworthy. They package it as a conspiracy theory. And an example was the sort of business that was going around about Princess Catherine when she was in hospital. There were all sorts of things going down, and they were described as conspiracy theories. They weren't conspiracy theories at all. They were rumours. That's all it was. But you know, speculation's a bit hard. Rumours are a bit hard. You know, let's dress it up as a conspiracy theory and just kick it to the curb completely. I mean, people are entitled to think what they want to think about something that's going on, and if it's speculation, it's speculation, and somewhere it might prove to be real.
Yeah, and if you find yourself being attacked for raising an issue or the possibility that something is so and given labels rather than having explained to you why what you're saying is not correct, for these reasons, that there's this evidence against it, I'd much prefer that. And it doesn't do anything to assuage my concern when I'm called a name rather than having my counter-argument presented.
Yeah, counter-argument's much better.
So TVNZ too have also faced cuts with Fair Go going. and there is also, who was it, Fair Go and Sunday program, and they're not particularly happy about that. Melissa Lee has suffered a bit of heat for this. And I think you're right. I think she's actually been quite canny. I mean, I know they've been highly critical, saying she's been missing in action. I think she's been told there is no money. There is no bailout. Yep. There shouldn't be a bailout. And I think she has done the politic thing, and she has just essentially been cagey and saying very little and seeing if they can work these things out for themselves. What I found really interesting, and Miles Thomas had a bit of a wah-wah about this on the 15th, and he said worst TV and video media in the Western world, and he compared us to Australia and Ireland. And he said we still have Q&A, but... And there are some things that they identified in the ways of te ao Māori, particularly in whakaata Māori, and then also some stuff for the youth in that RE product that they have. One of the things I found really interesting, and I pulled out where the PGIF money went to, because we forget about that, don't we? I mean, it ended up being, what, $61 million in the end?
Well, the Public Interest Journalism Fund, and the rack pot, full rack price, full page advertising.
They're not the
biggest name.
Yeah. So that's, you know, a massive amount of money. Now, one of the things that I've noted, have you noticed in all of these cuts, none of Willie's friends have had any dummies taken away from them or toys, none of them, not one. No funding cuts to Te Maunga Pāho, no funding cuts to Māori TV, nothing. Crickets. Just stay quiet. It'll be okay.
With speculation, I'm not sure whether it was in that report, but the reason that National Radio got its $25 million funding boost is that they weren't critical of the proposed merger.
Mm. Well, the concern is, of course, Miles is trying to say that, you know, we are having a product that isn't a standard in the Western world. Well, I think my argument is that when you have a national product, whether it be a TV product or a radio product, but especially in a TV product, when you cut that pie is only so big. And when you cut that pie up and ever decreasing in smaller slices, which they've gone and done, and then also given different diversity elements, even larger slices, instead of bringing those elements back up under the umbrella of the mothership, and dividing them out into their own separate areas, well, of course that money isn't. You're going to be doubling up on so many things, whether it be administration or reportage or the like. And when you look in that Public Interest Journalism Fund where a lot of the money went, it went for hiring of Māori reporters, hiring of Māori translators, hiring of people within theory or policy for, you know, te ao Māori. So yeah, there's a lot of money that has been spent that is now going to stop. All of these people, they don't appear to be the ones that are washing out in these redundancies. So that begs the question, what is going to be left at our state broadcaster?
Well, his solution was novel, wasn't it? TVNZ stops advertising on the weekends and TV3 can maybe sell a bit more. He's spoken truly like someone who's never been in business and has... no understanding of economics.
Yeah, never beaten any of the shoe leather that I bet for years and years and years going up and down streets selling advertising for a media company. He's got no freaking idea.
I think it's rather sad that Sunday's gone and that Fair Go's gone. Particularly Fair Go, because I think that has done a very, very good job over many, many years. But when you look at the program lineups on the schedules that TVNZ has, you've got to ask yourself, you know, there's an awful lot of crap that's coming.
Yeah.
There are the cooking shows, there are the building shows, there are the other reality, Celebrity Treasure Island. There's absolute vacuity on our screens for most of the time, which really should give way. They should be the things that go. I mean, Shortland Street's pretty vacuous as well, but, it's a bit of an institution as well, and it does provide training for actors and filming people and so on and so forth. But, you know, if they got rid of a lot of the crap, and then bought something like Q&A from a 9 o'clock slot on a Sunday morning, really, dead time, and put it into prime time, you know, you might get a better informed audience.
Well, in Q&A, rated, I think, in the ratings last month, was the number 5 show. It's the only one outside of prime time. So the fact that it rates that highly at a 9 a.m. Sunday slot is really pretty impressive.
Yeah. Well, it's tempting to wonder whether that these boneheaded moves are made by people who want to make the government look bad in the same way as you wondered why, of all of the things that our taxes go to, money that goes to the parents of severely disabled children gets cut. I would think that's one of the things that everyone could agree is a worthy destination for our taxes. But for the grace of God go I, you know, have some help. And by the same token, fair go, yeah, Q&A, those programs are the ones that you'd probably say, well, if we're going to have a state-funded broadcaster, then those are probably worthy things for that money to be spent on. Celebrity Treasure Island.
Well, we do know what your guilty watching pleasure is, though, Marty.
Well, yeah. I watch a bit of Married. I actually have a very touching live text exchange with Cameron Slater during Married at First Sight. Only for the psychological interest, you understand, David.
Oh, okay.
And also my wife knows a lot about cosmetic medicine, so she critiques the lip fillers.
Yeah, well, if you're operating at a highly intellectual level, Marty, I'm prepared to give you such a insight.
See, it's interesting because I have no issue with entertainment programs like that. I really don't. For me, it is around how they're actually apportioning that money, how they're spending it, like the number of people that they have in production for a show, which is like what I heard. There was a comparison between, and I think this was Mike Hosking did this on ZB. There was a comparison between the number of producers that he has for his show versus the number of producers that they have for Morning Report. And he read them on RNZ, and he read them all out. Now, he has 3 for News Talk ZB, and we have, Marty, well, I have for my show 1, which I share with Cameron and Rodney. So she's a very busy girl running between the 3 of us. So that's in that respect. It was something like 11 producers. Yeah. For that one show, 11 producers. That's a lot of wage cost.
Yeah, it's incredible. And that's the difference between doing things privately, doing things publicly. If you go into A&E, you know, A&E nurses will say, well, we're a free service. It's like, no, you're not. It costs you about $150 per patient. It costs about $150 per patient. Whereas, you know, a private medical clinic will do it for 40 or 50.
So in terms of where things from here, I mean, we're still working incredibly hard to get back on the air, and thank you to everybody who have contributed so far. If you're waiting to see what happens, look, it's still touch and go. We've had a meeting today, but let's put it this way, I'm being optimistic, being really optimistic. And there's some news that's coming out on the website very, very shortly, which will give you our pathway and our plan moving forward, what we're hoping to achieve. But we're not out of the woods yet. So if you haven't donated yet and you're able to donate, please do. That is at realitycheck.radio/off-air. We would definitely appreciate that. But where do you think they will go to from here? We now have that announcement. TVNZ looking at a shrinkage. I think they're aware of where things are at. I've seen sparks of actual journalism happening on RNZ. They covered the Cass report, as did Mike Hoskins on News Talk ZB. And then, up until very, very recently, anything related to transgenderism that was critical was an absolute zero no-go zone on any legacy media. So to have 2 very high-profile stories and well-done stories done by 2 outlets, for me, is a beacon of hope. David, what are your hopes to see in the next little bit as this starts unfolding?
Well, I think probably what I hope not to see is probably a bit more important, because now that Stuff and TV3 have joined forces, and given that Sinead made some very, very strong comments to the Select Committee on the Fair Digital News Bargaining Bill, I think that you are going to see a ramp up in trying to get money out of the large digital platforms like Google and Facebook. One of the things that outraged some people earlier on today was the announcement that the media awards, some award thing that has been sponsored by TVNZ for years and years and years and years, is now going to be sponsored by YouTube. And you know, the enemy has breached the wall and is now the main sponsor for this particular award ceremony. And the argument is going to be, well, these platforms, Facebook and Google and so on and so forth, are taking all of their content. But apparently that's not quite correct. And in an article that I got this morning from The Atlantic, which isn't a right-wing journal by any stretch of the imagination, it says as follows. In early 2018, Facebook began de-emphasizing news content, giving greater priority to content posted by friends and family members. In 2021, it tightened the tap a little further. This past February, it announced that it would do the same on Instagram and Threads. Now, Facebook, in fact, is going out of the news business and favoring more individualized content. What, in fact, is happening, though, is that the referral traffic that news media have relied upon from Facebook is now going down. So Facebook, in fact, by getting out of news, is reducing news activity and reducing eyeballs on the ads. And for news media to say, oh, Facebook's taking all of our stuff, rubbish. They're not. That's wrong.
Mm. What about you, Marty? What are your thoughts in terms of what you think may unfold over the next little bit?
I think it is unfair that those big social media companies take content and not only don't pay for it, but don't pay tax within New Zealand on all the revenue that they take out of the economy. So, I mean, it's good that we have that discussion, and hopefully they can arrive at some sort of solution. I mean, there's already a lot of fiddling with search engines, the algorithms with social media. So, yeah, I hope that we're not having a solution that's coming out of the government Christchurch call kind of fearful misinformation thing, which is really code for things that the big letter agencies don't like. I think we've got some very deep structural problems that need looking at, and we all need to have a good chat about it.
Mm. If somebody's using somebody else's stuff, particularly the product of their intellectual activity, the answer lies in copyright. It doesn't lie in Parliament legislating some kind of bailout, alternative bailout solution.
Well, this is very much your area, your wheelhouse, isn't it, David? So,
yep. I've got the solution. I put this
come on
to the Select Committee.
Right.
And mainstream media's comment was too complicated.
Mm. And the concern, of course, with everything is that they will try, and they've already failed really with hate speech laws. They will try, I think my concern is that these legacy groups, in order to protect themselves, will try and ring fence something to either legislate or financially using Google and Facebook as the vehicle. But what they're actually really trying to do is shut down and silence all these other alternative platforms who have popped up in this country to provide New Zealanders with an alternative point of view that they themselves haven't done, and they will try to use the government to do it. Now, they had a very sympathetic ear for the last 6 years. I don't think they're going to have that this time round, but boy, they can try.
Well, the objective is to have only one voice in the room. if I can pinch a title of a book about Roger Ailes of Fox News.
Yeah, it's horrifying. The boot stamping on the human face forever.
Well, if you want to keep hearing this good content on the air, as I mentioned before, realitycheck.radio/off-air to donate. And if you're able to make monthly contributions, that is even better. And we do greatly appreciate it. Marty, thank you very much. Good to see you again. And I get to see you in person tomorrow. Yes, exciting. Yeah, I'll see you tomorrow. And David, thank you so much. Nice to meet you for the first time and not the last, I am sure, here with a very special edition of The Fourth Estate.
Thank you.
If Reality Check Radio enriches your day in life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and the dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.